Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Have you ever stopped to think that the ground we walk on, the food it gives us, could actually be, you know, secretly shaping our genes? That these really tiny things in our diet, zinc, iodine, selenium, that sort of stuff, aren't just about health today, but might have actually changed our, well, our genetic blueprint over generations. It's a pretty wild idea, right? That tiny dietary differences could literally stamp themselves onto our DNA, affecting growth, metabolism. So what does that mean if these like invisible forces have been sculpting human evolution all this time? And what's the impact on your health or global health right now? Today, we're diving into some really fascinating research. It uncovers just how widespread this genetic adaptation is. It's like a silent evolutionary force, really.
Indeed. And today we should definitely celebrate the work of Jasmine Reese, Sergi Castellano, Ada M. Andres, and their colleagues. They're based at University College London, Great Ormond Street Institute of Child Health, and the University of Pennsylvania. Their research has it's really opened up our understanding of how much these dietary micronutrients drive local genetic adaptation and, you know, how human populations differ because of it.
Okay, so micronutrients, we know they're vital, right? Those essential vitamins, minerals, zinc, iron, iodine, selenium, the things our bodies need in tiny amounts. But what's key here, evolutionarily speaking, is that our bodies can't actually make most of them. Vitamin D is kind of the exception. We have to get them from food.
And that's precisely where the adaptation story kicks in. Because it's a balance to strike. Too little is bad, but too much is also a problem. Deficiencies, historically and even now, are incredibly common. We're talking maybe 2 billion people affected globally. Mm. And that increases risks for things like stunted growth, metabolic problems, even infectious and respiratory diseases. Toxic levels are rarer, sure, but they're also a health challenge. So our bodies are always trying to stay in this like narrow optimal zone.
Wow, 2 billion. That's huge. And it varies so much across the globe, doesn't it? I mean, human diets are incredibly diverse, not just because of culture, like, you know, the big shifts with agriculture, but fundamentally because of the environment itself, the local geology, the soil. That's a massive driver of what micronutrients end up in their food, often underestimated, I think. And now things like intensive farming, climate change, they're messing with those soil nutrient levels even more.
Exactly. And before this study, the evidence we had for this kind of adaptation was, well, suggestive, but limited. We knew about specific cases, yeah. Selenium in parts of East Asia, iodine in some African rainforest groups, maybe zinc patterns regionally. But the bigger picture, just how important are micronutrients overall as a selective force across the globe? That was pretty unclear. This research really tackles that big question.
So the mission of this study, they were looking for these signatures of positive selection. Tell me more about that. It's like finding genetic fingerprints, right? Where a change gave an advantage and spread quickly.
That's a good way to put it. They were hunting for those advantageous changes, specifically in genes linked to how we handle micronutrients uptake, metabolism, regulation, basically looking for the echoes of ancient environmental pressures written in our DNA.
And they needed a lot of data for that, I imagine.
Oh, absolutely. They used a really impressive data set, whole genome sequences from 913 individuals. And crucially, these individuals represented 40 different geographically diverse populations. So a really broad snapshot of human genetic diversity.
40 populations. And how many genes did they focus on?
They looked at 276 genes known to be associated with 13 key micronutrients. Let's see. Calcium chloride, copper, iodine, iron, magnesium, manganese, molybdenum, phosphorus, potassium, selenium, sodium, and zinc. They did exclude vitamins and a couple of other minerals, mainly because the genetic knowledge about the specific genes involved wasn't quite there yet.
Okay, 276 genes across 40 populations. That sounds incredibly complex. How do they actually pinpoint these subtle genetic adaptations? What were the methods?
Right, it required some pretty sophisticated tools, computational tools mainly.
Okay.
They needed ways to spot these tiny genetic differences that became common. One key method was using FST. This basically measures genetic differentiation between populations. So if a gene shows a really high FST value, it suggests that region became very different in one group compared to others. That signals local adaptation after the group separated.
Okay, so FST looks between groups. What else?
Then they used a method called RELATE. This one's quite clever. It tries to reconstruct the genealogical history, like a family tree for genes. This lets you see if a particular version of a gene, an allele, increased in frequency really fast within a population. That points to a selective advantage, potentially an older one.
Faster than expected by chance, you mean?
Exactly. Much faster. And then for a wider lens, they used SUMSTAT. This is designed to look for polygenic selection.
Polygenic, meaning multiple genes working together.
Precisely. Adaptation isn't always just one gene doing the work. Sometimes it's a whole set of genes related to, say, zinc metabolism that show a collective signal of selection. SUMSTAT helps detect that.
And they were confident these methods could pick up even subtle signals.
Yes, that was important. They did a lot of work with simulations, computer models to test these methods. They confirmed the tools were powerful enough to find selection even when it was acting on existing genetic variation, which can be quite subtle, especially for complex traits like nutrient metabolism.
Okay, so they have the data, the methods. What did they actually find? What's the big takeaway?
The big takeaway is, well, that's pretty striking. Micronutrients as a whole category have been a major selective force shaping human genetic diversity. It's not just a few isolated examples. For instance, using that FST method, they found that a majority of the populations, 25 out of the 40 they studied, showed a significant excess of selection signals in these micronutrient-related genes.
25 out of 40? Wow, that's more than half. That's a really strong signal, isn't it?
It really is. It tells you this is a widespread phenomenon. And the specific examples really bring it home. Take iodine, for instance, the American Maya population. They show the absolute highest significant excess of selection signals in iodine genes. 79% using RELATE, 50% with FST. Really high numbers.
And what does that mean practically?
Well, it points to a potential link with something interesting. The distinctively shorter stature seen historically in the Maya and also in some African rainforest groups like the Mabudi and Biaka. These populations have traditionally lived in environments known to be low in iodine.
So you're saying short stature might actually be an adaptation to low iodine, not just like a deficiency symptom?
It suggests it could be, yeah.
Yeah.
Evolutionary response rather than just a consequence of poor nutrition in one generation. That's a powerful idea. It reframes how we might think about some population traits.
Fascinating. What about other nutrients? You mentioned selenium earlier.
Right, selenium. Here they found clear signs of what's called oligogenic adaptation.
Oligo, meaning a few genes. Not just one, but not loads either.
Exactly. A handful of key genes working together. They saw this pattern in several East Asian populations, the Yakut, Chibo, Mongolian, Japanese. And this lines up really well with known selenium-poor soil belts in places like China and the historical occurrence of diseases like Kishan and Kashinbek, which are directly linked to selenium deficiency. But interestingly, they also saw signals in some African populations too, suggesting different groups adapted in potentially different ways.
Okay, and zinc. You said that one seemed particularly widespread.
It certainly did. Zinc adaptation signals were strong and geographically very common, especially across many non-African populations. They identified 7 specific zinc-related genes. 5 of them are transporters, moving zinc around, showing strong selection signatures in at least 10 different populations.
10 populations for single genes. Like which ones?
Genes like SLC30A9, SLC39A11 were prominent examples. This pattern might reflect an older adaptation, maybe in an ancestral non-African group, possibly driven by, say, the very zinc-poor soils found in the Middle East, a key region in human migrations.
But not everywhere.
Well, it's nuanced. They also found a distinct signal in the SLC39A4 gene that seems specific to West Africa. The thinking there is it might be linked less to soil deficiency and more to pressures from local pathogens. Zinc is important for immunity, too.
Right, it's complex. And calcium and iron.
For those, the adaptation signals seem to align more with the timing of human colonization of Eurasia. It suggests that the geology of these new environments played a really significant early role, perhaps even more so than the later dietary shifts that came with farming, the Neolithic Revolution.
Okay, geology as a prime mover. But you mentioned a twist with magnesium, adaptation to too much.
Yeah, that was a really neat finding. In certain Central South Asian populations, like the Uyghur and Brahui, they found evidence suggesting adaptation to excess magnesium. Genes like FXYD2 and MECOM showed strong selection signals in areas known to have high levels of magnesium in the soil. So the adaptation might have been to actually reduce magnesium uptake or retention rather than boost it.
Reduce intake. That's counterintuitive for nutrients.
It is, often. And get this, a fascinating detail with the MECOM gene was that the selected region contained DNA introgressed, inherited from Neanderthals.
Wow, Neanderthal DNA is still influencing how some populations handle minerals today.
It seems so. It just highlights these deep, ancient connections between our genomes and the specific environments our ancestors encountered. Makes you wonder what else is lurking there.
It really does. So pulling all these examples together, what model of adaptation does this support? Single genes. Lots of genes.
It points strongly towards that oligogenic model we mentioned. So selection seems to have favored acting on a few key genes within a micronutrient's pathway, rather than just one single gene in isolation, or conversely, a huge number of genes with tiny effects.
A few key genes approached by evolution, perhaps.
Something like that. A functional set working together.
So the big conclusion then, micronutrients haven't just been a minor factor, they've been a really significant global force in human evolution.
That's the core message, yes. Far more significant and widespread than we generally appreciated before this study. They've actively shaped the genetic variation we see across the world today.
And connecting that back to our listeners, these genetic differences between populations and how they handle nutrients, that has real-world consequences for health today, right?
Absolutely. It has major implications for public health, for understanding health disparities between groups. It suggests that populations showing strong evidence of past adaptation to specific nutrient levels should probably be prioritized in genomic medicine research. We need to understand these differences better to tailor healthcare effectively.
Personalized nutrition based on evolutionary history, almost.
In a sense, yes. But there's a challenge looming.
Which is?
The environment isn't static. Global soil micronutrient levels are changing rapidly in some cases due to climate change, rising CO2, intensive farming practices. And at the same time, people are moving around the globe more than ever. Migration is increasing.
So you have populations moving into environments their ancestors didn't adapt to?
Exactly. They might encounter diets or environments where their historical adaptations are suddenly no longer beneficial. They might even become detrimental.
That sounds like the evolutionary mismatch idea. Our genes are lagging behind our changing world.
Precisely. And this mismatch could worsen existing health problems or create new ones related to nutrition. Our ancient adaptations could become modern liabilities.
So where does the research need to go next to address this?
Well, several key directions. First, we desperately need better high-resolution global maps of soil micronutrients to actually link the genetic signals precisely to the environmental pressures.
Connect the genes to the geography, yeah.
Right. Second, we need more functional studies, lab work to figure out exactly what these selected gene variants do.
Yeah.
Are they increasing uptake, decreasing it, adapting to deficiency or toxicity? We need the mechanistic details.
To understand the how.
Exactly. And third, we need to link all this genomic information to real-world health data. Using large biobanks, public health data sets, to see how these genetic variations actually play out in terms of health outcomes today and how that contributes to health inequalities. It's about translating this evolutionary knowledge into actionable health insights, using the past to inform the future of health. That's the goal. So ultimately, our deep dive today reveals this powerful truth. The availability of essential micronutrients in the soil and food has been this constant global sculptor of human evolution. It's driven specific genetic adaptations in populations all over the world.
And this history, this interplay between diet, environment, or genes, it's not just ancient history. It creates these unique metabolic landscapes in different populations today. And that has really significant implications for health disparities now and definitely in the future, especially as our soils and diets keep changing so dramatically. So we ask you, how might understanding these ancient adaptations better equip us to address modern health challenges related to nutrition, especially as populations move and environments shift? This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Thanks for listening and join us next time as we explore more science base by base.